Like what you hear? Tell your friends. Thanks for listening to HRNRadio.com.
Well, hello, everyone. Happy holidays to you. You are listening to Chad E. Cooper on Legendary Lifestyles. We, you know, this is where we create harmony in our material world with the spirit of our souls. And we often talk about the tangible, the measurable methods of what it means to achieve a legendary lifestyle, with the caveat that it's unattainable without all four characteristics. So in coaching, we look at that as the physical and the logical, certainly, but also the emotional and the spiritual. And it's this last piece that many steer away from. Well, today, we dig into the metaphysics of life. Ralph Waldo Emerson, one of my favorite authors, someone I love and respect, says, "Metaphysics is dangerous as a single pursuit. We should feel more confidence in the same results from the mouth of a man of the world. The inward analysis must be correlated by rough experience. Metaphysics must be perpetually reinforced by life, must be the observations of a working man, of working men, must be biography." Well, our guest today put that in his book. Mitch Horowitz is just the man to help guide us through the contentious and a much debated topic. Mitch is the author of the much anticipated and soon to be released book, Miracle Club, How Thoughts Become Reality. Therefore, Mitch is a writer in residence at New York Public Library, a lecturer in residence at the University of Philosophical Research in Los Angeles. He is a Penn Award-winning author of books including Occult America, One Simple Idea, How Positive Thinking Reshaped Modern Life, Mind as Builder, and the book's topic today, The Miracle Club, How Thoughts Become Reality. He's written on everything from the war on witches to the secret life of Ronald Reagan for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post, Salon, Time.com, and Politico. But here's what I love about Mitch's writing, and it's what the Washington Post says about him. He treats esoteric ideas and movements with an even-handed intellectual studiousness that is too often lost in today's raised-voice discussions. And I agree with that statement, and that's why I'm excited to have him share his message with us today. Friends, let's welcome Mitch Horowitz to Legendary Lifestyles, and let's dive in. You there, Mitch?
I am. Good to be here, man. Thank you.
Awesome. So, often we see in today's world some divide, and, you know, you begin the book with the approach of Ralph Waldo Emerson, that this is really, you know, about one that is simple, dynamic, and a truthful guide to living ethically and with power.
Yes.
So let's begin with, you know, what's the purpose of Miracle Club?
The purpose of the Miracle Club really is to try to fulfill, in our time, what Emerson was after in his own, which is to offer people a really practical philosophy that can make a day-to-day difference in life. And when I set out to write this book, I felt that I couldn't shirk from addressing the most vital issues that people face, health, relationships, money. I mean, those really are the big three, and one has to be honest about that. And I feel those things are sacred. For me, there's no division between the spiritual and the material. I think human aspiration is sacred. If we take seriously that we're created in the image of the higher, then we too are here to create, to generate. And that's going to take different forms in the lives of different people with different needs, but I want people to get somewhere. I want people to get places. And so I was very touched by that passage that you read from Emerson about how metaphysics must be biography. He felt that our spiritual outlook had to have an impact on our hour-to-hour life. And he really meant it, you know, in terms of 3 p.m. on Thursday afternoon. You know, we had to be able to see our spirituality as something that really was measurable in results. And the results that most of us are seeking are things that would be called material. But again, I don't make a division between the spiritual and the material. And the Miracle Club is about helping people seek and find ethical attainment.
I love the integration or the willingness to say, you know, it's enough of having these separate conversations.
Yes.
We as human entities are both. And so let's have a conversation, let's have a debate, or let's have a discussion about that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Very few people are able to do that, both from a place of understanding versus judgment, from a place of empathy and compassion, where they can actually say, you know what, let me first understand, doesn't mean I have to agree. But when we do that, we come from a place of respect. And I want to go in, and that's really the piece that excited me. But before we dive into that piece, you talk about miracles in the beginning. How do you define a miracle in your own terms? Because that's one of the, you know, when we talk about the metaphysics, when we talk about woo-woo, airy-fairy, and mm-hmm. you know, saints and all of these things, is this term miracles. And you define it very nicely, but why did you define it? Why did you feel that you needed to address miracles, and why there's so much contention around that term?
Sure. You know, it's very bold to use the term miracle in some respects, and people feel, you know, as you were alluding, that you're promising fairy dust, you know, in some way. And the truth is, I define a miracle very simply as a fortuitous departure from all expected circumstance. That's all. A fortuitous departure from all expected circumstance. And in the same way that everyone would agree that life does at times visit on us terrible burdens or even catastrophes, life also visits upon us just extraordinary bursts of good news, circumstances that deliver us from a problem, for example, that we might have thought was implacable. And my contention is that these things are not entirely random, that our minds, our thoughts, the extraphysical forces that I think are part of being human can assist us along the way. In the same way that our minds and thoughts and that extra physicality can deliver us to very difficult circumstances, we can learn to cultivate the miraculous in our lives. And I say that with all bluntness and with all straightforwardness. There's not an ounce of marketing copy in that statement. If you define a miracle simply as a wildly unexpected turn of events for the better, contrary to all expected circumstance, then we're part of the same conversation. And I absolutely believe that can be cultivated. It's something that I've been working with for 20-some-odd years, and you know, the book shares my methods and insights into that area. I think part of the problem, frankly, with some of our current spiritual self-help books is that they're not bold enough. The forefathers and foremothers of our movement, which I guess you could call motivational or inspirational spirituality or new thought, they were just extremely bold. You know, their books had titles like Think and Grow Rich, The Game of Life and How to Play It, How to Win Friends and Influence People, The Science of Getting Rich. And I love the boldness of these people. They were great communicators. They were prepared to make an epic promise, but also to back up that epic promise. And I think our spiritual culture has grown too shy. I think we're afraid of seeming materialistic or grasping in some ways. And again, you know, as we started by discussing, I don't make a separation between human needs, needs that could be called transcendent and needs that could be called material. I think they're all one thing. And so I want us to grapple with ideas like miracles and do so seriously. It's a bold statement, but it's a statement I'm prepared to defend.
Agreed, absolutely. If you're just tuning in, friends, you're listening to Chad E. Cooper on Legendary Lifestyles, and our guest today is, and I'm assuming I'm pronouncing it, usually I ask, and I apologize, but it is Mitch Horowitz, correct?
Horowitz, that's right, yep.
Okay, I got it right. Good.
You got it.
Author of the upcoming book, The Miracle Club. And we started here with the miracles on our own terms, and let's get into the reality, because you take a practical approach to this that I have rarely seen effectively presented. And there's a practical side of being legendary or having the power to manifest your goals.
Yes.
And you ask this question in the book, do you possess or are you willing to attain the necessary skills to earn money through whatever career, service, or product you have dedicated yourself to? This consideration is vital because you cannot serve the productivity and betterment of others and hence make financial claims on them without being able to plant and harvest. In other words, don't dream of being a farmer, but be a farmer by harvesting a crop and thus having something viable to offer.
Yes,
and so this
absolutely.
Is the, look, we can talk about miracles, but this is where the spiritual side of professions, of industries, I think get a bad rap, and I absolutely respect that industry as well. But let's be real. In order for you to achieve, it isn't about just saying an affirmation. There are no weeds, as Tony Robbins would say. There are no weeds. Look, you got to get out there and weed the crop if you want to harvest a big field or a big reward.
Yes, yes. I feel very strongly that an authentic wish is also an actionable wish. Otherwise, it can just become a kind of idle daydream. If I sit around daydreaming that I'm going to be asked by NASA to join, you know, the space program, that's not an authentic wish at this point in my life. And I think that for a real aim, a real goal to be genuine, you have to be able to identify some steps, however small, that you can start to take in the direction of it. Again, it's this idea of stripping away barriers, this idea of stripping away differences between, let's say, a thought and an action, or an inner and the outer. It's all one thing. It's all one life. And coming to a place where you really know what it is that you want to do with your life means that you can start doing it in some way. If you need to get training or education, that training or education should be practical, should be available to you in some way. If you want to start a business, you should have some obvious skill set in the area of the business that you're pursuing. It was interesting. Several months ago, I heard from a guy who lived in Washington, D.C., and he had an office job in private business, was doing well, but he was unhappy. He wanted to be a movie producer. And he asked me whether I thought his dream to be a movie producer was outlandish, was just idle. And we walked through certain steps, and I said, look, if you're thinking of yourself on the scale of, you know, some guy sitting in an office off of Wilshire Boulevard, yes, at this point, that may just be an idle dream, but in fact, there's a vibrant and thriving student film scene and independent film scene in D.C. Go to these festivals, see what's happening, see where you can start getting involved in funding or raising money for people who are doing film shorts or documentaries or what have you. There are ways to actually enter that world, and they can be surprisingly fruitful. It doesn't mean you can quit your day job tomorrow, and you may never quit your day job. There's lots of great artists who never quit their day jobs. But the fact is, you can't bind one to the other. You can start taking action right now. So even if something sounds outlandish, the fact is, if you can start to think of concrete ways to act on it, then you're holding on to something quite real, and it should be taken very seriously.
In fact, it should be taken quite seriously, and I think that's the connection in here is, as we look at the metaphysical versus, as we often look at it, is that the head, the heart, and the hands, right?
Yeah.
So we have body, mind, spirit in that. Is there's a responsibility that people neglect. And Napoleon Hill, who you talk about quite a bit, and it's often one of the top books for executives or high achievers that utilize that. There's one question that he asked that I find, and as good of a great of a book as it is, the one question that I see differentiates 99% of the world from those who have actually read the book and those that actually understand this question is the steps to effective decision making. It's the very last question, and he asked, what are you willing to give in exchange for the outcome you desire?
And so
you posit a connection between the individual in some kind of higher capacity of the mind. That does not mean that the only thing or the law of mentation is going to go on in your life. Lots of events, whether biological, mechanical, metaphysical, can be going on simultaneously. But we have to put this into context in saying, you know, it could be argued, as you say, that these and other physical events, when following periods of intensive prayer, meditation, or improvements in morale, are what mental healing and the spiritual appeal look like in the body.
Yes.
But it's also the decision, what are we willing to put our hands towards to manifest it?
Yes, yes. First of all, I have to say, I love how you structured that question. And, you know, when you said, I can always tell whether someone has actually read the book by whether they've gotten to this part or are familiar with this question, because we live in a culture where people pretend to have read things that they haven't read at all. You know, people who have these strongly felt opinions about The Secret have never watched or read The Secret. People who are certain that they know just what's inside Think and Grow Rich have perhaps not even skimmed Think and Grow Rich. It's a very interesting book, and there's many layers in it. I appreciate the way you structured the question. I'm like a seventh grade teacher who can always tell when a kid hasn't read Lord of the Flies or A Separate Piece. You know, they never, critics and journalists can never fool me. But I liked how you structured it. And yeah, there's a lot there that's important. You know, first is you have to be willing to give something. You have to be willing perhaps to sacrifice something, which may mean vast amounts of time, for example. You know, I'm always telling people that life makes a very tough bargain with us, but it can be an extraordinary and transcendent bargain, and that is that you get something like what you want or very close to what you want, provided you can be tremendously specific about it and that you're willing to pay the price for just what that is. There are, I think, frankly, in some regards, well-roundedness is overrated. You know, there are lots of people who you and your listeners might look upon as heroes, whether entrepreneurs or diplomats or activists or sports figures. And believe me, you know, as you could well augur, most of these people dedicated their lives very single-mindedly and perhaps even obsessively. I don't view obsessive as a negative word. That's obsessively to one singular goal. And that's a bargain that life demands from us. And that might mean that there are other things in your life that are secondary, that are de-emphasized, that receive short shrift. And one has to be very frank about that. This bargain is a tough bargain, but it's a very real bargain, which is that if you can be very, very specific and be prepared to pay the price of one certain thing, things will happen. Things will come to you. So make sure that thing covers a lot of different bases, and make sure that they're good bases, and make sure that you really know precisely what you want. And the other part of your question, as you're alluding, one of the things I write about in the book is that, oh, and by the way, I should mention the book is available right now. It's actually out right now, just so people know. One of the things I write about in the book is that we sometimes are too quick to think that we understand what's happening in a certain situation, even within ourselves, even within our own bodies, just because we can place our fingers on one aspect of it. But there's lots of things happening at once within our lives. And, for example, if an individual is sick and prays for deliverance from that illness, or if an individual uses affirmations, visualizations, and experiences some significant and lasting relief from that illness, the actual process that's going on in the body may be traceable to any number of different things. It may be that the release of endorphins or the release of anti-inflammatories or the release of certain enzymes that lead to a better state of physical well-being, that may be what the spiritual appeal looks like in the body. It may also work in conjunction with mainstream medicine. There may be dozens of different things going on at once that deliver us to where we need to be. And we should never write off a certain step, whether it's prayer therapy, whether it's allopathic medicine, whether it's alternative medicine, whether it's meditations, affirmations. Never write off a certain step when you're in pursuit of a goal. Throw everything at your goal. Nothing in life requires us to be exclusive, because there's usually a complex of factors. You know, sometimes people go to a therapist and they're trying to get to the back of a certain problem, and they're having trouble getting in touch with the root cause of a problem. And the trouble may stem from the fact that they or the therapist or both of them together are looking for one root cause, where in fact there's a complex of causes. So I would always pursue a complex of solutions, because I think that's just in the nature of life. So that's one of the things I write about in the book.
And I would absolutely agree with you, because a legendary lifestyle, often I'm asked the question, what is exactly a legendary lifestyle? Mm-hmm. And I believe it's the making, or having the power to make, and the art and science to navigate your own purposeful future. For me, is the ability to say, you know, I have a responsibility to get clarity of taking something complex, this idea or this goal, and get really simple and really clean about what that looks like. Yeah. And then I also have the ability and the responsibility to say, I need to connect that with whatever I might define as that higher power. Yeah. And so we're going to take a break here real quick. And as we do that, I want to to talk about, you talked about these, you know, the Vedics and the Buddhists and stuff that's been brought over, and maybe people didn't actually read the original intentions behind it, and how it can mislead us. So, friends, stay tuned to Legendary Lifestyles. We're going to talk about the Miracle Club and how we need to understand, trust, but verify in our teachers. We'll be right back.
Podcast to help you reach your positive potential. HRNradio.com.
And we are back. My guest today, Mitch Horowitz, author of the newly released book, The Miracle Club, Raising the Bar of Greatness and Living Life Fully. So, Mitch, let's get back to our conversation. We left our friends here with some great works that are out there. And we are not in a world today where we have a shortage of information. However, we do have a responsibility to say, hey, I trust that there's good intentions here, but we also have to have the responsibility to verify that they're trustworthy, that they're actually accurate, as Ronald Reagan would say. And so it begins with, in this, and you talk about this, I want to start with not diving in. Well, actually, yeah, let's just go right into it, shall we? And let's talk about the Far East teachings versus the Western ways of the world today. Because there's three kinds of people that are in the world today that drive me nuts. And those three are the following. Those that are labeled spiritual essence, or the higher power labeled sometimes in the world as airy-fairy or woo-woo, and they use that essence as an excuse or defense for why they may struggle in the material world.
Yes.
Then there's the second type of people who have abandoned the relationship with their spirit and reject a moral compass because of a negative experience in maybe a particular religion, and they use that as an excuse of, oh, I'm spiritual. But they're doing the act of spiritual instead of actually being spiritual and having an intimate relationship with it. And then we have the third side, and those are those that achieve material attainment only to reach a point. We've seen too many celebrities, as an example. They reach this point and say, tell me there's got to be something more. Yeah. They've abandoned any connection with their spiritual higher power. Yeah. So if I understand your book, you're offering that it's not a either-or scenario, but it's rather a this-and opportunity when you say, it doesn't suggest neglecting daily obligations or loosening your hands on the plow of effort. Whether you're an artist or an activist, a soldier or a craftsman, you must see wealth as a necessary and vital facet of your life. You can do far more good with money than without. You must recognize money as a helpful part of existence. And so I love the fact that you have the courage to say, friends, this isn't either or. In fact, without both, you will get on a journey that leads you astray and lost and going, where am I? Or am I enough? Or tell me there's got to be something more.
Right.
I want to talk about that and then into kind of the readings that we get and how we can get lost in maybe relying too much on a guru. But tell us about how you see that integration for the Miracle Club.
Well, I had a conflict, a very serious conflict for many years in my search, and I think a lot of people will be able to relate to this. I was sort of divided between, I guess what you could call thy will be done versus my will be done. I had difficulty trying to plant my flag, I would say, into whether I was really looking for some sort of a transcendence of earthly concerns, or whether I was really looking for some sort of a fulfillment of earthly concerns. And of course there are many different ways to approach this, and many different people and contemporary teachers and seekers have spoken eloquently and talk of trying to get to a place where there's a disillusion between my will and thy will, kind of trying to come into some transcendent or higher state of perspective and so on. And I worked with all of those ideas, but I ultimately came to feel that the Western seeker, the contemporary 21st century seeker, and I very much include myself in this, will never be truly happy in life, will never truly feel at home in his or her own skin without some sense of personal achievement without some sense of progressively and successfully moving in the direction of a sense of ambition, a sense of attainment, a sense of establishment of one's wishes and desires in the world, in whatever form that may take. It can take many different forms, ranging from commerce to politics to artistry to any number of things, but to neglect the need of progression towards personal attainment conscripts one ultimately, I think, to a life of dissatisfaction. And I issue that as a loving but very serious caution to my fellow seekers. I don't think that we were put here just to transcend the material world so much as to establish what we owe both to the material and the ethereal, so to speak. And ultimately, that's the point at which we come to realize that the two are one. The best dictum that's been issued on this is from the words of Christ: render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and God's what is God's. Both these worlds have a claim on us, and when we can honor that fact, I think then we start to come into an authentic appreciation of the lack of division between both these worlds. But one of the things that concerns me is that within our contemporary alternative spiritual culture, there are ideas from the Buddhist and Vedic traditions, traditions which I bow before, traditions which are sacred and universal traditions, but ideas that have migrated to the Western world, sometimes...
Yeah, hold that thought.
Very, will do.
Yeah, I want to specifically talk about that, but before we do...
Will do.
I look at this in a way that we look at these Vedic in Buddhist, in Tibetan, etc., as seeing somebody, and I have all the respect in the world, love the works of Eckhart Tolle, but he's an example of somebody who has a meteoric rise. And we look at this as, oh, we need to transcend beyond the material. I argue that it's actually an easier job and probably selfish to say, I could go off and abandon my family, abandon my business, my responsibilities, and go seek spiritual enlightenment for myself.
Right.
But I argue that it actually takes more courage to say, I'm going to seek that while participating in the material world and learning what it means to be an extraordinary husband and to be an epic father.
But
that is actually the greater cause. But
when
we look at the, you're talking about the recycled ideas from the Vedic and the Buddhist traditions, and use them to prop up the unexamined ideas about the need for non-attachment, that transcendence of the material. Eat that. I'm better because I don't need those things, but in reality, they actually haven't deciphered a word, as you say, of Sanskrit, Tibetan, or ancient Japanese. But we got to take a commercial break from what I was just told. But I work with the oldest indigenous tribe in New Zealand. And I said, you know, I'm suffering from this angst when people do things that irritate me. They said, the chief said, let them go first. I said, well, in order to do that, I'd need to let go of my ego. He goes, yes, but not entirely. And it was the first time in my life that I heard somebody say that the ego has a place.
Has a place.
So, friends, if you're wondering, what is that place? How do we find that harmony? Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Mitch Horowitz in the Miracle Club.
Uplifting Talk. HealthyLife.net.
Well, friends, welcome back to Legendary Lifestyles. I'm your host, Chad E. Cooper. Our guest, the Miracle Club, raising the bar on how we can actually achieve the capabilities of thought into reality. Our guest, Mitch Horowitz. And if you were tuning in, we left you with a cliffhanger, it sounded like, on the Far East traditions and people coming out with what sounds really smart, what sounds really intelligent, and saying, abandon these things because I know the way. But have they actually gone back to source? Have they spent time with the origination, the traditions? because we're told that the ego self grasps at illusions and fleeting pleasures, as you say, mentioned, formulating a false sense of identity around desires, ambitions, attachments, and the need for security. And I question whether this interpretation is accurate, you said. So
yeah.
Where are we cherry-picking these theologies and philosophies in trying to drop them into the West to enlighten others?
Yeah, I really appreciate your question, because it's rare that I get the opportunity to discuss this very bluntly. My path is not a path of non-attachment. My path is not a path of non-identification. It's a path of aspiration. And that's as defensible through my spiritual experience and my spiritual reading as any other path. I'm not here to make another person's path wrong, but so much as to offer my own experience. I think that we have imported ideas from Eastern traditions, specifically Vedic and Buddhist traditions, in a very, very sketchy way. And we have convinced ourselves, by which I mean many of us who seek within the alternative spiritual scene, that concepts of non-attachment and non-identification are vital to our search. And the fact is, no religious tradition can be detached from the cultural circumstances in which it grew. This is true of Judaism, this is true of Christianity, this is true of the new religions, and it's true of the ancient Eastern traditions, which were devised in an ardently and stiflingly caste-based atmosphere, where if you were born into a certain caste or economic class, you had no more chance of economic mobility than you did of traveling around the world or traveling to another planet. And those religions, by which I mean specifically Buddhism in its many variants, Hinduism in its many variants, emerged from societies that, in terms of caste and class, were enormously stagnant. And one has to understand that cultural context before talking loosely in terms of non-attachment and non-identification, because I think those things, and I say this in all bluntness, and I say it lovingly and with deep respect for those traditions, I think those things are terrible dead ends for the 21st century seeker. I think our seeking today has to take into account the need to create, to be generative, to be productive, to aspire within the world. And quite frankly, I think some of the people who are purveying some of those traditions in a somewhat sketchy way are very popular writers like Eckhart Tolle and Michael Singer, who I admire in terms of their achievements, ironically, but I'm not fans of their work because I don't think that their work will lead to a long-term sense of selfhood and satisfaction for the 21st century seeker, who must incorporate in a very unencumbered and unapologetic way some sense of aspiration into his or her search. I don't think that that kind of ersatz Easternism is the direction for the 21st century seeker. I bow towards Buddhism. I bow towards Hinduism. These cultures are magnificent, they're beautiful, and they contain universal truths. But I think those particular ideas of non-attachment and non-identification have been falsely unmoored from some of their historical contexts and brought to our culture in a way that is not always accurate, is not always possessed of historical integrity, and is not always helpful to the 21st century seeker.
What I can appreciate about those is my first experience with the oldest indigenous tribal people of mm-hmm. New Zealand, and in that experience, I believe what the practices that they're attempting to, for people that are attempting to achieve it, is that it actually allows us in the West to slow down and become present mm-hmm. into
yes.
our moment.
Yes.
And it's one of the things when we were over there, and there was a large group of us for the first time, and the elders kept on hearing this, and finally one of the elders who I adore gets up and says, I keep on hearing you all say, this is such a special place, this is so magical. And he goes, stop it! It's not special.
Yes.
It's
yes.
normal.
Yes.
This is what normal is. You are experiencing what it means to have a normal experience, a human moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what these practices open us to, the possibility of we cloud with, once I have this, once I achieve that, once I have enough knowledge, once I have enough in the bank, etc., then I can speak whatever I want. The problem is in our society today, we have some people who have achieved, The challenge is that they are speaking the truth without love.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that some of our leaders, we have people that are really vehemently, you know, triggered by them because they're speaking their truth, but they're not speaking their truth through love.
Yes.
And what they were offering to us is, you are doing a miracle. And as Brené Brown would say in Daring Greatly, there's two kinds of people. Type A people who, when under stress and anxiety and tension, will do things to numb that emotion.
Yes.
And type B, which is only about 3% of the population, will actually identify the behavior that led to the anxiety and have the courage to change their behavior.
Yes.
And so what we're doing is we're doing all of this spirituality instead of actually changing our behavior to actually come into a relationship between the spiritual and the material. And I don't believe in work-life balance because that gives the illusion of 50-50. But when we have harmony, like a symphony, like music, there's high and low notes, and it all flows in a harmonic balance. And so I argue that if you are somebody that says, I want to go out and change the world, and you want to make a crap load of money, stop apologizing for saying you can do both. Own it. I tell people, I change people's lives, and I make no apologies for making a crap load of money doing it, because I can take that and then go out and serve other people in bigger ways.
And because
so that's what I see the attempt.
Yeah. And when I tell people mine is a path of aspiration, people sometimes ask, well, gee, you know, what about ethics? What about love, as you were alluding? And my code of ethics is very simple, that you must go about your machinations and movements in the world with a practice of nonviolence. And what I mean specifically by nonviolence is not doing anything that violates another person's ability to strive toward his own sense of personal attainment. Not doing anything knowingly that would disrupt another person's ability to seek his or her own highest self-potential. And that's hard. That means not humiliating people. That means not objectifying individuals or groups. That means behaving ethically. That means keeping your word. That means doing all kinds of things that we might think we're doing all the time, but that if we double back and really examined our actions, even in the space of a single hour, we'd be put in front of enormous questions about ourselves. So strive to live in such a way that doesn't violate anybody else's ability to seek his or her own highest potential. That's my code.
I love it. Those lines is as we discover these new paths that open up in our journey, is then the challenge or the judgment that we often face. And we're going to take a commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the intercession of a higher power, and that as you navigate and move from your parents' faith to your own, somebody that Mitch had talked to and knew that said, God, I'm going to be talking to you in a different way now.
Yes.
Tune back in to find out what does that mean to be able to still talk to your God, but in a different way. We'll be right back on Legendary Lifestyles.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net. Millions of listeners know the secret. Now you do too. Positive talk 24 hours a day, every day.
Welcome back to Legendary Lifestyles. Friends, we have been having a lot of fun here in seeing how miracles can happen in real life. How we can actually take the Miracle Club and with our author, Mitch Horowitz, be able to bring our dreams, our aspirations, and those thoughts, and really make them reality. But how sometimes we go down these paths of great intention and get lost because we forgot to verify the intentions of others.
Mm-hmm.
And we also can be in a place where we reach new beliefs, we reach new understandings, that clarity, and it just resonates with every peace in us. And in reality, it just works. But it also may clash with maybe our traditions, our childhood traditions. And Mitch, you were talking about in your book this woman who went from being raised Jewish to finding meditation in Buddhist practice.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that she didn't abandon her old tradition, but it opened that door for her to say, I could chant and say, God, I'm going to be talking to you in a different way now. She didn't change gods.
That's right. That's right. She's absolutely a heroic figure to me. Her name is Emily Grossman, and she gave me permission to use her name and her story in the book. She is coping with bipolar disorder, which came upon her when she entered college. And she it cut short her college career. It upended her life for a period of time. And she's just an absolutely remarkable person who sought solutions in many different places, from psychopharmacology to a Buddhist tradition of chanting. And she grew up in a traditional Jewish household in New Jersey. And as you were alluding, she said one day in prayer, God, I'm going to be talking to you in a different way now. Her Japanese Buddhist chants and the books that she was reading directed her towards a more radically ecumenical spirituality than the Judaism that she had grown up with. But she didn't feel she was abandoning her Jewish roots. She felt that religion could open doors to us, even that went beyond the tradition from which one was praying within, even that went beyond the tradition from which one had been committed to. Religion has this open at the top quality where it can lead you to doors that go beyond its own parameters, and that was Emily's experience. So my wish is for people to feel at liberty to drink from any number of religious wells without feeling that they are abandoning their family or their childhood tradition. I think it's almost in the very nature of authentic religion to overrun its banks, so to speak. Real religion knows no parameters.
And I see as part of that, thank you for that clarification, because part of what I see is in Emily's success was her coming into a relationship that we can do knowledge, we can do religion, we can do material attainment, we can set our goals. But to me, the miracle is the willingness of a human being to understand that it's the emotion that has to be integrated and it has to be the center of that commitment in order for it to come alive.
Yes.
Without emotion, that's where we hold back, we wear our veil of armor to protect ourselves from emotions of others, from the courage of being able to express our emotions of who we believe we are to the world. So how do emotions play into this?
You know, very often in my tradition, which is the New Thought tradition, we wrongly conflate thoughts and emotions. And they're two very different things. The body, the emotions, the thoughts, they're all going off doing their same, doing different things at once, running on parallel tracks and rarely converging. When we're doing affirmations, prayers, visualizations, or applying ourselves in the world, our emotions have to be on our side. Our emotions are the absolute vital gelling agent to everything that we want to do. So structure your affirmation, structure your prayer, structure your visualization, your chant, your spiritual practice, however you want, but your emotions have to be behind it. It has to feel internally persuasive to you. When it does, that's when remarkable things can happen.
I love it. Friends, if you haven't already gone out to look, go out to Amazon, go out to Audible. You're going to find The Miracle Club by author Mitch Horowitz. Go out and get it. It is absolutely in my top five of best books that I've read this year. So you will not regret picking it up. Go out, give it as a gift to yourself, give it as a gift to somebody else. And I want to leave our audience with this possibility, Mitch, and that is, you talk about, and Emerson says that, that in order for us to put this into practice, two components are critical. One is to drill, the other is concentration.
Yes.
And it's about when we do that combination where we actually create a relationship with our emotions. And you talk about airline pilots rehearsing landing.
Yes.
And it's that relationship that we can then understand how do we actually want to control how we show up, to be in balance or harmony with that. So how do we actually put this into practice as we wrap up today?
I'm so glad you brought up Emerson. He said, as you were alluding, there are two components to power, drilling and concentration. And by drilling, Emerson meant what we today would call training or rehearsal. Just as a pilot will sit in a flight simulator for thousands and thousands of hours, or as a martial artist will run his routines again and again and again, or as a medical resident will make thousands and thousands of rounds, you know, kind of trying to confront every possible different scenario and situation. Drilling or training or rehearsal is absolutely vital. Nothing is more important in terms of preparation for what you want to do in the world than a repeat series of actions that foster just absolute excellence and preparedness. And then the other recipe to power is concentration. Take what you're doing and concentrate it on one very specific point. This is why it's absolutely necessary to have an obsessive, passionately felt, emotionally driven aim. Don't scatter your energies. It's a law of nature that power comes from concentration. A laser is nothing more than light concentrated. Every time there is a manifestation of power in nature, whether it's lightning, whether it's the force of a tsunami, it comes from some sort of stressors gathering on a single pin point. The same is true in our lives as it is in nature. You have to ask yourself what you want in life, and you have to be absolutely, passionately focused about it, clear, specific, and concentrate all of your training, all of your abilities, all of your drilling on one pin point. You will find deliverance. You will get what you want, or you will get something very close to what you want, but you have to be absolutely unsparing with yourself in applying these principles, and the result can be extraordinary.
It reminds me of those that are exceptional. And friends, I would love nothing more than for your 2019 to become a miracle itself. And when we are able to wield these tools, as Emerson says, as Mitch has given us, it reminds me of the Smoke Jumper's Creed, and it says, do today what others won't, so you can do tomorrow what others can't. That's where miracles stem from. So if you want for your 2019 to be a miracle, put this into practice. Go pick up the book. Rarely do I, in situations where I'm like, okay, hurry up and answer because I got like 50 more questions here. I could go on for hours more, but Mitch, it has been a pleasure.
Likewise.
Thank you for being part of Legendary Lifestyles. And friends, set yourself up now, out of the gate, today, to start the momentum so you go into the new year already going at full speed. Mitch, thank you again for being a guest. And friends, tune in next time to Legendary Lifestyles.